Understanding Jihadis from Kishore Chandiramani. There is no such thing as jihadi personality. The majority of jihadis are not psychiatric patients, and the same statement would be true about them being psychopaths or intellectually challenged. Are they victims of the larger social forces that use them as pawns? When assessed psychiatrically, most of them will not fit the strict diagnostic criteria of psychopathic personality. We may find that some of the jihadis fall in one or more of the above categories. It's difficult to predict what percentage of them would have none of the above issues, as we don't have any studies here to quote. It may be that some of them will have low levels of intelligence, but obviously they won't be applicable to other terrorists, as some of them are highly intelligent, more intelligent than an average person. There may be other types of jihadis as well, as mentioned below. First, uninformed or misinformed jihadis who are ideologically driven. Number two, suicidal or psychotic jihadis. Suicidal who want to die anyway, irrespective of whether they are jihadis or not. And psychotic who want to kill because of their delusional ideas, perceiving others as threats or enemies who should be killed before they themselves get killed. Third, deeply unhappy individuals. It can also be due to very intense pain that is greater than any happiness in life they can think of. This is seen in the family members and offspring of terrorists who got killed. The pain of living is much greater than the pain of dying, and they choose the latter as a solution to the problem. It can also be due to the loyalty to the family member who has died as a result of an injustice. In my clinical practice, I see a lot of borderline personality disorder clients who cut themselves with sharp objects regularly. Their psychological pain is much deeper than the pain of physical injury they are causing to themselves, and the physical pain distracts them from the greater psychological pain. Next category is child jihadis. One who is not grown up enough to use logic. They haven't got their faculty of logic analysis fully developed. It's like a child who knows only his parents, and he doesn't have the ability to compare his parents with other adults in the community, and he has no way to judge whether his parents were right or wrong. Due to this identification, they end up believing that what the father was saying was the right thing to do, and they don't have the ability to even apply logic to make sense of the situation. When you ask them, why did you carry this out? They will simply say, because my father or so and so told me, and I respect that person. Next category is pseudo-altruistic jihadi. Identifying with the cause greater than our own lives is deeply ingrained in the psyche of all of us. It's the spiritual or altruistic or divine side of our being, and we all are capable of operating from that space. However, only very few of us can bring that into action in our lives. The fearlessness of a spiritual or revolutionary leader, a soldier, a journalist, or a charity worker who put their lives at risk in war-torn areas are all examples of that. They are putting their lives at risk for the benefit of others, as the cause is greater than the value of their own single life. kamikaze pilots can fit in this altruistic category, but many of them were fearful teenagers who were pushed into the job of flying a plane to their death. Very much like teenage Russian soldiers having to fight, not knowing the deeper meaning of the war. They were simply obeying the orders from above. The difference between a jihadi and these altruistic people could be in the killing of the innocent by a jihadi and what cause they identify with. The solution is prevention, and we can't prevent people from becoming jihadis unless we understand what caused them to choose this path in the first place. Not just the external factors, but the internal ones. There aren't many scientific studies examining the internal factors. The psychological research into jihadi behavior is still in its infancy. There aren't many research studies directly assessing the psyche of jihadis. Most of the reports are based on the published literature, anecdote reports, study of their police interviews and writings, and armchair speculations. A study of the psychology of jihadis will not only help the police and the army, but our lawmakers and the politicians, the social workers and psychotherapists. The law enforcement agencies try to understand the social forces that make use of the vulnerable adults, and the culprits are sent for a psychiatric assessment only when they show obvious signs of psychosis, depression, suicidal thoughts, etc. But the majority of jihadis don't undergo psychological or psychiatric assessment, which can shed some light on the reasons why they become jihadis. The Kashmir scene. It would be an error to assume that terrorism has largely been eliminated from the JNK. It may be that many of the terrorists are lying low, waiting for their time to come. The situation is like an unruly classroom where children become quiet as soon as a very strict teacher walks in. But as soon as he's gone, the class becomes unruly again. Contrary to the above, if we have a teacher who can convince the students that focusing on studies and extracurricular activities is better than creating nuisance in the classroom, which would be self-harming, it's quite possible that the class will still be disciplined when this teacher is gone. I'm not implying here that tough hand of law would be inappropriate. In fact, a combination of the two may be required. There are three ways of challenging behavior. First, a fear of the negative consequences. Second, the lure of the positive gains. Third, a change of heart unrelated to the above two for one's inner peace. We need all the three, as the improvement resulting from the first two may not be lasting. A permanent change of heart will occur only when one can clearly see what the right action is and can understand that it will result in them being at peace with themselves. To understand the ideology behind radicalization, we will need to understand its origin. It's generally a dream of freedom or revolution of a handful of politicians, a dream handed down to the current generation. At times, it's based on the perception of superiority of the land and its people by the masses or by just a few politicians. At other times, the conflict is kept alive by external forces and it's not the cry of the masses. Addressing the issue of radicalization at the ideological level is also important, and the job can't be done by the military or the army. Even politicians will need help of historians, thinkers, writers, political analysts, and mental health professionals. The UNESCO radicalization is defined by these three points. First, the individual person's search for fundamental meaning, origin, and return to a root ideology, which is ideology-driven. Second, the individual is part of the group's adoption of a violent form of expansion of root ideologies and related oppositionist objectives, which is get a sense of belonging to a group which is more important than personal happiness. Third is polarization of the social space in the collective construction of a threatened ideal us against them, where the other is dehumanized by a process of scapegoating. Basically, it's the inner conflicts which are externalized into others. An us and them scenario is created and the undesirable is projected onto them. A New York Police Department report, which systematically examined 9/11 incident in depth and studied Al-Qaeda influence, has identified the following four stages. These are the four phases of radicalization. Number one, pre-radicalization. Second, self-identification. Third, indoctrination. And fourth, jihadization. Histories of child abuse and trauma and themes of perceived injustice and humiliation often are predominant in terrorist biographies, but they don't really explain terrorism, as many with similar histories don't become terrorists. Psychological causes of jihadis. Number one, perceived injustice. Number two, need for identity. Number three, need for belonging. The early theories that had focused on hostility to one's parents may not be the precursor to radicalization. Terrorist profile of the white supremacist outfits KKK, PLO, or IRA in the UK are going to be different from Kashmiri militants, and we should not transplant solutions borrowed from Israel, America, or England. Before we apply the solutions that have worked elsewhere in a given community, we need to make sure that the malady is like the other situations where the solutions were applied successfully. Apart from the socio-political and religious reasons, it's important to study the individual factors as well. Now, looking at who is vulnerable. This group will consist of rejected by peer, immigrants, outcasts, victim or witness of race and religious hate crimes, conflict with family or religious beliefs, identity confusion, and discomfort about their place in society, personal crisis, recent religious conversions, been in contact with recruiters, perception of injustice, a feeling of failure, rejection of civil life, a series of traumatic events, and prison population. There are all sorts of terrorists across the globe. The radical groups for far-right ideologies such as neo-fascism, neo-Nazism, white nationalism, patriot sovereign citizens, white power skinhead gangs, etc. Then the next group would be left-wing terrorism. They had overthrown capitalist systems and replaced them with Marxist-Leninist or socialist societies. The IRA and PLO had included communist and socialist ideology into their policies. Now, moving on to de-radicalization. The following four P's of counter-terrorism have been used in dealing with terrorism. It's prevent, pursue, protect, and prepare. In the UK, prevention strategies have been employed in schools. Prevent toolkit has been used in Sunderland schools. They promote British values, which is democratic values, individual liberty, mutual respect, study and tolerance of different faiths, safeguarding children and adults vulnerable to being drawn in terrorism, training teachers in being aware, etc. Thank you. This audio was brought to you from the Emotions Clinic Education and Training Center, Stoke-on-Trent, England.